You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. Hello, everybody. This is Nadira Jamal, the Belly Dance Geek, and welcome to episode 58 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. If you've got a product, service, or event you'd like to promote, we'd love to have you become a Clubhouse sponsor. That helps us cover the costs of producing the show, and it lets you reach over 1,500 geeky belly dancers. You can find info at bellydancegeek.com/sponsor. And the Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, things like moves and combos and choreographies, it's really easy to find resources. But if you want help with the why and the how, business, musicality, culture, composition, all of that stuff can be harder to find. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and we always have time for questions and answers so you can geek out too. If you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest tonight is Jamie Lynn. She fell in love with Middle Eastern music over 2 decades ago, and that in turn introduced her to the amazing world of belly dance. With over 2 decades of dancing and discovery, she shares her enthusiasm through performance, teaching, and producing events such as Bahia's Cabaret Dance Camp, the World Dance Showcase, and other Central Texas events. Multiple degrees in the fine arts, in addition to her love of travel, research, and personal enrichment, spark a continued interest in the historical and cultural importance of this dance through its musical and movement history. As a dancer, she seeks to illustrate the music with movements, with the belief that a deeper understanding of what the music tells us to dance can lead to a lifetime of enrichment. Technique is the basis, but expression is the goal. She's been honored to teach and perform nationally and internationally, and was a featured performer on AMC-TV's Showville, as well as a variety of independent films, festivals, and stage shows, and with live bands from around the country. Her new series of independent studies, called Roxology, will be debuting at the Belly Dance Business Academy in February. She's also a costume designer and the creator of a line of custom silk clothing. You can check out her website at jamielynbellydance.com, and that's J-A-M-I-E-L-Y-N-N. All right, welcome, Jamie Lynn!
Hi!
I am
so excited. You make me sound
so
fabulous.
Well, you are. All right.
I will have to apologize in advance. I am suffering from jet lag. I just got back from Egypt. And so if I get a little brain foggy, I apologize.
I'm sure you'll be fine. And if you do get a little foggy, just take your time and
yes.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
All right. So Jamie Lynn is here today to talk to us about maqams. Now, there's a little vocabulary note in there, and that's that in Arabic, the plural is maqamat. And so there's kind of like a style question here, right? So if you're speaking in an English sentence, you can use the Arabic word or you can use the English one. So, for example, we say zils versus ziller and pizzas versus pizza. So I usually go with the English one. I think Jamie Lynn usually goes with the vocabulary, with the Arabic one. So you're going to hear both during this call. So.
Exactly. But yes, maqams or maqamats. Is perfectly reasonable. So,
cool. All right. Well, before we jump into the technical stuff, Jamie Lynn, I'd like you to tell us your origin story. Tell us about how you got started in belly dance.
Yeah. So, I fell in love with the music first. I didn't even know anything about belly dancing. I'd maybe seen a couple of dancers at a Renaissance fair, but that was so not on my radar at all. But I fell in love with Middle Eastern music. I'm a big fan of Peter Gabriel, and he put out the soundtrack to a film and had collected music from the Middle East. So there was a CD called Passion Sources. Some of you may remember that back in the day. And I picked it up because it had Peter Gabriel's name on it. So to me, you know, it was worth listening to. And I just absolutely fell in love with the stuff. I was like, what is this? Where can I find more of this? And I was lucky enough to be in one of my college classes with a family friend. I've known her for years, and she was teaching the class. It was an art class. And a kid in class, a guy, said, hey, can we listen to music? And she said, only if you listen to mine, and I doubt very many of you like Middle Eastern music. And my ears literally perked up. And so I went up to her after class and said, "So, Pat, I just discovered Middle Eastern music. What can you tell me? You know, what do I need to go look for?" And she goes, "Well, why don't you come take my belly dance class?" And I had no idea she was a belly dancer. This was back in the early 90s, where you didn't really come out as first thing that you were a belly dancer. And even though she was a family friend, I had no idea. So I took her up on her offer and took a class and absolutely loved it. I had never been a dancer before. And I surprisingly had a facility for it and some talent. And that was the end of that. I took classes with her for about 4 months, and then we had a little performance, and I will never forget the moment of standing on stage when it hit me literally like a ton of bricks that I want to do this the rest of my life. And so I've been dancing ever since.
Awesome. And tell us about how you got interested in Makam specifically.
So it's been, you know, over 2 decades since that moment on stage, and that epiphany of loving the music and finding a means to express the music with belly dance. And that continued kind of road has led me to look deeper and deeper into the music. So, you know, it's one thing to have your favorite songs and say, yes, you know, I want to dance to these, they're fabulous. But then there comes a time where you really want to look a little bit deeper into what you are dancing to. And that occurred for me about 10 years ago. You know, you do the restaurant dancing and the Renaissance Festival dancing or whatnot. And then at a certain point you say, okay, what more is there to this? What am I dancing to? What culture is this from? What is there beneath just the music? And so I really started to explore getting the translations to all of the song titles, any kind of transliteration that I could find about the actual words, really trying to find out what this music was about. And so that is what has led me to looking into the structure of the music, which is the makam or the makamat.
Awesome. So why don't we start from the very beginning? What is a makam?
Okay. So it's kind of like the key a song is in. That's the basic way you can look at it in Western terms, you know, our 8-note scale. But the difference, the real difference is that makamat is based on tonal intervals rather than the starting note. Like our Western scale is in A or A minor, which is going to start on that A, or key of C is going to start on C. The makam, even though it uses specific notes, the important aspect is the intervals between the notes. So, for example, they could it could be a whole step, a half step, or a quarter step. And the tricky thing is, it can start on any note in that scale. So it could start on A, B, C, D, E. But depending on what the next note is, the interval between the next note and the third note and the fourth note is what creates the makam. So that's really very specifically convoluted and complex to kind of wrap your mind around if you're not a musician. But that's okay, because there are ways to access the makam without having to know exactly what the notes are. So, to go back a step, when you're talking about them in the makam following the correct interval, example, Nahawend, which is one of the main common makam, it's whole step, half step, whole step. So again, this is music theory, and as dancers, we don't necessarily need to know that. But those that series of intervals is what the musician is going to take and then create the rest of the song with. That makes sense?
It does to me. I think I might want to have you clarify the term interval a little bit. So, like when we talk about a
Sure.
whole step, we're talking about like do, re, mi. Each one of those is a
Exactly.
step.
Exactly.
And so, like an interval could be any number of those things, right?
Yeah, it could be a whole note, so A to B to C, or it can be a half step, which would be like B to B sharp or B flat, or it could be a quarter tone, which is specifically in Arabic music. So,
Okay, and
for
in, oh, go ahead.
go ahead.
And in the maqams, are they ever more than a whole note step? Like, do they ever jump over a full one?
No, I don't believe so. It's usually going to be either whole step. Well,
At least in
actually,
the common ones.
I'm looking at my notes, and yes, Hijaz looks like it might be half step, one and a half, and a half. So, yes.
Gotcha.
These are
Okay. And if
for the
anybody is more
serious music
confused by my
geeks.
question, forget I asked. If you were following until I said it, that's cool.
Yeah, again, this is something that is very technical for musicians. It's just good to know as dancers sort of the basis of it. But like I said, we don't necessarily need to know that, Hijaz is half step, one and a half step, half
Okay.
step.
So we've got a
That's
pattern of these
down the rabbit
intervals
hole.
or steps
Yes.
of specific size, and those give us the patterns
Yes.
that the
And those
musicians have to
patterns
learn.
are called djins, JINS. And a maqam is made up of two or more djins. Just for your own knowledge. It's like words in a sentence. The djins are strung together like words in a sentence, and that's what creates the maqam.
All right. Now you were saying that we don't need to know the specifics of the djinns specifically,
Fortunately, no.
Okay. Why don't I have you go ahead and continue that thought?
Yes. So, really, the important thing for dancers to know is that maqamat have emotional content attached to each of the specific maqam. So, that is where it becomes important for a dancer to know. If you're a musician, it's great, it's fascinating, and it can take you down a rabbit hole for sure. But if you're not a musician, if you're not, learning to play Arabic music, we can access this still as dancers and have it be important to us because of that emotional content.
All right, and can you give us some examples of maqams and their traditional associations?
Yes, absolutely. And oftentimes, when you're researching songs online, you will find what the maqam is for the song. And that's what's really great is because of the advent of the internet, we have so much information at our fingertips that you can find these out. So when you're looking for the maqam online, looking at particular songs, these are some of the ones that you're probably going to come across. The most common, there's nine of the most common are Ajam, Ajam, Hijaz, Hijaz, Nahawand, Nahawand, Rast, Rast, Bayati, Bayati, Sika, Sikah, sometimes without the H, Saba, Saba, sometimes with an H, Kurd, Kurd, and Nawather, Nawather. Also, in Arabic versus Turkish music. Turkish music also uses makamat. I most often come across Hijaz and Nahawend, and they are usually spelled Hikaz, Hicaz, and Nihavent, Nihavent. So Hijaz and Nahawend are Turkified as Hikaz and Nihavent.
Which is funny because in Turkish they sound the same.
Yeah,
It's
exactly.
still Hijaz and Nahawand.
Yeah, but it's spelled so very differently that you wouldn't know. So those are the nine most common ones. There's some other ones out there also, but really for our purposes, those are the best ones to know. And the emotional content of each of those is as follows. And I'm actually going to tell you a couple of songs that are in that particular maqam, so you can start to kind of hear it. It takes a pretty experienced ear to hear it. I'm not even sure I'm there yet.
But you can listen to the different ones to hear some of the differences in flavor, at
Yes,
least.
exactly. So ajam, the emotional content behind it is typically cheerful or bright. It's really sort of almost a Western major scale. It tends to be a little bit more kind of comfortable to Western ears. People tend to kind of recognize that one. And Lisa Fokker, and Agdan Alkak are a couple of songs that are specific in Ajam. Hijaz is lonely, distant, or spiritual. And some of these maqams are often intent. They mean a place or a location sometimes, like Nahawend, Nihavent, which is a particular region. Or sometimes they mean specific things, like Ajam actually means foreigner. So maybe that's why it sounds comfortable to our Western ears. So Hijaz, lonely, distant, and spiritual, and a couple of songs that are in that maqam are Ayya Zayn and Ana Fi Intizark. And then we have Nahawand, which really implies a strong emotion. It's usually very, very dramatic, kind of extreme changes of emotion, oftentimes for love songs. So we have Leylat Hob and Alf Leyla, and Bir Demet Yasmin is also in Nahawand or Nihavent. And of course, Oyun Nihavent in Turkish. Let's see, Rast is the next one, and it is masculine or powerful or classical. I've read that it is usually it's the maqam in Taarab, which is a feeling of musical ecstasy, that it tends to engender a feeling of musical ecstasy most often. So, pretty fascinating. And Fakhruni and El Hob Kulu are a couple of songs that are in Rast. Then there's Bayati, which is feminine and joyous and uplifting. Shashkin, Yayin Muleyhatin, is in Bayati. So this actually brings me to something. Sometimes it doesn't seem like the song fits the maqam. Like, I wouldn't necessarily think of Shashkin as being feminine and joyous, personally. So this is something that, knowing the maqam, it may not necessarily fit it to our Western ears, but it's a nuance that gives a little bit deeper meaning to the song. So if you can think like Ayya Zayn is another one that is kind of, it's Hijaz, which means lonely or distant. And at first listen, it doesn't really seem that way to me. But then if you look kind of beyond the surface of the music and delve a little deeper and use that as a sort of a an access point, it gives you a little bit deeper nuance to the music. So,
see, I love that piece. That is the like single biggest reason why I figured we should have you come on the show and talk. So for those of you who don't know the story, which is probably everybody, Jamie Lynn has a great workshop that includes this stuff. And she taught that at the Las Vegas Belly Dance Intensive when I was there. And I took it. And, you know, I had always been of the stance that, hey, these are really cool. But given that their primary purpose is to add the emotional content to the music, and mm-hmm. we can pick up on the emotional content of the music by listening, then it's one of those things that's really interesting to learn, but not necessarily a must know, right? Like, all knowledge is worth having. Let's geek out.
Yes.
This is great, but, you know, not necessarily like a nuts and bolts kind of thing. But when you mentioned that nuance, I was like, oh, right?
There it is.
Yeah. So, you know, that nuance is giving us a dimension on the music that the composer was putting in there on purpose that we may or may not pick up on.
Yeah. Especially, you know, if you haven't grown up listening to Middle Eastern music all the time, you may not know these necessarily. And so this just gives us a little bit more access into the actual, to the music that we're dancing to. Yeah.
All right. Now, I think you had left off on Bayati.
Yes. All right. So Bayati. Sika, the next one, and it is youth and strength and fresh. Sika is kind of a it's a little bit more modern kind of in its feeling. And Sika, a song to go with that one is Siret El Hob. It's not as many written in Sika, which is interesting, at least that I have been able to find. So Saba is the next one, and that is sad and lamenting. And Ya Bahia and Hassan, Salamat Ya Hassan, are a couple songs for that one. Kurd is the next, and this is actually named after the Kurdish people. And it's airy and spacious, which actually makes sense if you think about where the Kurds came from. And Inta Omri and Aziza are a couple that are written in Kurd. And the last one, Nawa Ather, is formal or mystical. And Gamil Gamal is a good one for that one. So there's our nine primary makamat with their emotional contents.
Awesome. So we've got this, you know, really great, you know, I don't want to say like answer key because that's not quite the right thing, but we've got this great, you know, like guiding set of information. You know, mm-hmm. what should we do with this?
So really, you're going to apply it to particular songs that you want to find, you know, a little bit deeper understanding about. But really, what I found most appropriate for me, the thing that really struck for me was what to do with taksims. So the taksim in the music is that section where each instrument player gets to take their solo, kind of show their skills. And when you look at particularly CDs or recorded music, oftentimes it'll say taksim bayati or taksim rast. And for a long time, I didn't know what that was until I started studying makamat and realized, okay, each instrument is going to take a particular makam and use that as their sort of launching point. So they know what these emotional contents are. So say the oud player is going to do a taksim in Kurd. He's going to have that idea of airy, of spaciousness in his playing. So if we know that, particularly in recorded music, that's the easiest way. Or if we talk to the musicians and, you know, we can kind of get a feeling ahead of time of what maqam they're going to do their solo in, then you can really jump on that and kind of use that as an element of your dancing. So you're not just doing the movement. You're not just dancing along with the oud, which is wonderful, but you're also able to express some of these underlying emotions as well.
I'll just get you both on the same page.
Yes, exactly. Even more on the same page than just the music equaling movement, you know? Mm-hmm. And the toxines, excuse me, just for a little bit of structural of music, the toxim is often used to switch makamat in a song. So you might start out with one particular makam, and then the toxim can take that first makam and then switch it into a second makam, and then the rest of the song can go on in a new one. So that's a little something there too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, in terms of, you know, practicing working with this stuff, is there anything that you recommend to folks?
I think just listening to it. There's a good CD called Makams Made Simple. A good name for a good CD. And they do a very good job of listing. This is Aboudi Badawi is the one.
Austin
who
guy.
Put that one out.
Got to give out a local plug. He's one of our New England musicians, actually.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So that's a very good CD to start your ear listening to what they are. They play the djinns, the intervals between the notes, so that you know kind of what to expect, and then they play songs that actually are in that makam. So I would say putting that on and dancing to the different toxims and songs that have the makam in them, and at the same time accessing the emotions, draw that in to your practice, that's the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's one thing that kind of comes up a lot in musicality discussions, which is the idea of certain movements being appropriate for certain instruments. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a lot of value in that. But every time somebody, you know, I've seen somebody, you know, kind of explain what movements are appropriate for the instruments, I always kind of feel like a better approach is for the student to explore the instrument and say, hey, what do I think goes with this particular thing? And then go ahead and listen to what the other people have to say and incorporate that into your take. So yeah. I wonder if there's some kind of approach that we can do with this set of associations and emotions. You know, maybe like before you memorize the list, maybe go ahead and listen to a whole lot of Nehawend, right? And say, okay, what do I feel? And then go to the official, not the official, but the, you know, kind of the classical association and say, okay, well, how does that fit in with what I know? So, you know, so what's interesting too is that sometimes, both in my experience and what I've seen other people in their learning process, is that often the most interesting things that we find are where it doesn't fit. And we kind of have to understand that. It's not just that I disagree, it's I had a different perspective on this thing. So, you know, let's say it's this, you know, lonely, distant, and spiritual, and I was getting
joyous and uplifting.
Right. And maybe, you know, maybe that's, you know, like the joy of anticipation of when that loneliness is going to be dead. You know, you can find even like another layer of nuance between the official one and yours sometimes. And
that's what I think is the beauty of it, is you listen to it for yourself and you say, okay, this is what this song says to me. Like I was talking about Aya Zane, you know, to me it's a very lively, happy, joyous song. But then I find out that the makam means distant or spiritual, and that does seem to be a little bit of a disconnect. And I've read that is often the case, especially like I said with Western ears, we have a slightly different interpretation of it. But looking back at what the classical makam emotion is, it does make me listen to the song a little bit differently and go, okay, you know, can I hear that in there? And yes, I can. And so it helps, it gives that little bit of more nuanced dancing. Yeah.
I like that. You know, just to dig a little into this for the listeners, you know, like as you're saying this, you know, Aya Zane is kind of on my little like must know list of songs
yes,
that I occasionally
absolutely.
Take some of my students through. And, you know, so I've memorized the lyrics because it's so short,
mm-hmm.
right? It's,
mm-hmm.
oh, what beauty, like the rose in the garden, right?
Yeah.
And there's
yeah.
nothing obviously lonely, distant, or spiritual about that. But one way that you could approach this stuff is say, well, this thing that I'm, this feeling that I'm getting from listening and these lyrics that I'm reading, well, what happens if I add a lonely or distant or spiritual
exactly.
element to it, right?
Exactly.
And so maybe this, you know, great beauty in the garden is not the garden that's in my house. Maybe it's a thousand
exactly.
miles away.
Exactly.
Right? And that
yes.
can give you this different take.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. It takes what you are feeling and then adds on another layer, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Now, is there
good
any
stuff.
Other reason why it's a good idea for dancers to be learning about these?
Well, I think just for our own understanding of the music, of being an educated dancer and recognizing that there's more than just, you know, the lyrics and the notes and things like that. And it gives you a chance, you know, if you are able to talk with live musicians, to be able to show that you're a little bit knowledgeable about what they're doing, that they are producing the music that we are dancing to, and our intention is to be the music, is to be the illustration of the music, and it just makes you a better dancer if you are cognizant of the structure of music, to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just going as deep as we can.
All right. Well, you know, I have actually reached the end of my questions for you. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about makams?
Let's see. Did I mention Makam World?
No, you didn't.
Website? Okay. So this is an excellent, so if you want to go deeper into it, and it is really a pretty technical, but they do a very, very good job of trying to making it accessible to non-musicians necessarily. It's called makamworld.com. So a nice, easy, rememberable one.
We'll
and,
put it in the show notes.
Yeah. And so that's an excellent resource if you're interested in learning more. There's so much you can go into with this. I mean, I literally am just scratching the surface of it, but I think for dancers initially getting into it, we've got a pretty good basis of how to approach it. But if you want more, there's lots more.
So, you know, I'm thinking in terms of, you know, coming to recognize these, and obviously looking up is an option for a lot of things. But are you aware of any resources that, you know, for kind of like learning to hum your way along with them? I know you mentioned Makam's Made Simple. Do you know if Makam World has any kind of like audio
yeah,
tracks?
There are. If I remember correctly, I know that I have come across them in my searches. So I'm pretty sure Makam World does. I'm not saying that 190%, 99%, but I'm pretty sure it does.
Great.
And
were
like
there
I
any
said,
other-
also just looking up. Like I have a list, and maybe this is something I could shoot to you, which is the Kulthum discography, which has the makam of almost all of her songs.
That would be
so
awesome.
That's
if
kind of nice.
Sending that to us. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to remember where that came from. Ooh, should cite my resources. But yeah, I'll send that to you and we can put it up on the list. And so it's just, you know, it's a matter of doing a little bit of research. And like I said, thank goodness for the internet. We have all of that at our fingertips now. So Some of these are very easy to find, others not so much. But, you know, it's also one of those things of, even if you don't know the makam of a song, you're still going to get an emotional content of it just by listening to it. And that's an appropriate response, is whatever you are listening and whatever you are feeling from it, that is your interpretation as a dancer, and that is perfectly valid as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Well, we are going to move on to questions and answers in a sec, but you know, if people take one thing away from this call, what would you want that to be?
You know, it's really to just explore as deeply as you can into the music you're dancing to. You know, we are representing a culture's art form, and so, you know, at minimum, knowing the translation of the title, preferably the words, if you can find it, and most of those are, you can find just about everything online now, and then, you know, going further into the makamat, which with the emotional content, you know, but I think that's the thing, is to just delve as deeply as we can into that which we are dancing to.
Mm. Yeah. Awesome. And if people want to learn more from you, what are some resources for doing that?
Well, I have started something which you mentioned briefly, which I hope all of the Clubhouse geeks will be interested in, is Roxology. So I have a Facebook page. It's Rox-Ology, Rakx-Ology. And a website, which I just got up, so it's still in process, but it's roxology.com with a hyphen again. And these are resources for people to share information about music and culture and history and all this good belly dance geeky stuff. And then, as you mentioned, in February or possibly March, depending on how quickly I finish them, I will be launching the Roxology self-paced study courses for belly dancers. And these are going to be PowerPoint presentations or videos. You can choose whichever you want, on topics like belly dance history and dancer timelines, music, styles of belly dance, and whatever else I feel like coming up with. And those will be on the Belly Dance Business Academy website.
Which is awesome, so, and if you're not already checking that out, you should be. A whole bunch of our guests are on there.
Yeah, and if all goes according to plan, I'm actually going to be producing a CD from Hollywood Music Academy that's going to accompany the courses. So that'll be fun.
Awesome. Now, did you mean Hollywood Music Center by any chance? Did you mean Hollywood Music Center?
Yeah, is that what I said? Is that what
I think you might have said
Music Academy.
Academy. Yeah.
Yes, I had Belly Dance Business Academy on the brain. I'm telling you, jet lag is nothing to sneeze at.
Not a problem. That is an
Hollywood
awesome
Music
resource,
Center.
Too, to have all of that collected right there.
Yeah, it really is. So I'm excited about that. So, and of course, I'm happy to travel around the country to teach workshops and all this fun stuff. So if anybody's interested in hosting me, feel
That's
free
how
to
we
contact
all got
me.
Started today. So, and what's the best way to reach you?
On my website, jamielynbellydance.com. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of contact things, or you can email me at jamielyn@gmx.com.
All right. Great. So let's go ahead and open up the call to questions and answers. So
yes.
Folks who are listening on the webcast, if you do not have your mic and speakers connected, you can use the question box on the right. That looks like a little cartoon speech bubble with three dots. Otherwise, if you are using your mic and speakers, I think you can unmute yourselves in the dashboard. If you're calling by Skype or by phone, you can press ** to unmute yourself. We would love to hear your questions. If you have any follow-up questions, any specifics about songs, your favorite takeaways from the call, anything that you'd like to share with us, we would love to hear from you. And this is the part where we wait for somebody to go first.
Yep.
I feel
Don't
like we need
shy.
Little theme music for this part. All right, we've got a caller.
Woohoo! Hi, my name is Chantal. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Chantal.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you so much for that wonderful lesson. That's really priceless.
Oh, good.
It's so hard because it can be so abstract, but this
yes.
is a really great beginning.
Good, good. It can.
Great.
It can, it's,
I want.
It's, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, no worries.
Okay, I was just going to say I wanted to ask you about your recent trip to Egypt, if I may. I know it may not be directly on topic.
Go for it.
I'm happy to talk about it.
Oh, great, great, because I was considering going to the Ahlan Festival for the first time in July, so I wanted to ask you about your trip.
Oh, boy. So I had the great luck to go with a friend who has been going for many, many years, so I got a very much family view of Cairo, more so than going on a tour. So we really had an adventurous time in the city, and I have not felt as safe there as I have ever had in any country traveling. I was really
wow.
surprised at that. Yeah, and I had heard other
wow.
friends say that they felt very safe there. And, you know, it's something that we don't really expect, you know, thinking of all the news that we hear about the Middle East. But,
yeah,
we were walking around at 10:30 at night, you know, two Western women, and we were never harassed. We were never catcalled. It was perfectly fine. So, yeah, I'm not saying that it is 100% safe. Nobody can say that anywhere,
mm-hmm.
even outside their door.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a wonderful time and would highly recommend it. So,
oh, great. Thank you. I'm so glad to hear that because that
yeah.
was one of my husband's concerns, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
There's a lot of plainclothes policemen. There's a lot of security mm-hmm. personnel because, you know, they're very concerned about their lack of tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say there were very, very few Europeans there.
Oh.
I'm sure there will be more at a dance festival. You know, like I said, we were mostly just downtown and in the markets and things like that. And very,
mm-hmm.
very few Westerners. So they're trying very hard to make people aware that it's good to come. So
excellent.
Yeah.
And
so,
may I also ask, do you think that 2 weeks is enough to be there on a first trip?
It depends on how much you want to do. If you're going for the dance festival, you know, that's fantastic, but do make sure you go see some of the archaeological sites. The museum, the archaeology museum is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're traveling, if you're going to go to Luxor or Aswan, I think two
yeah.
weeks would be a fantastic, fantastic amount of time. Yeah.
Great. Great. Thank you so, so much. I don't want
You're
to take
welcome.
Your time away from anybody else who might have a Macomb question.
Well, it's all related, you know.
All right. Well, thanks for breaking the ice, Chantel.
My pleasure, Nadira.
All right. So if anybody else has got a question, a comment, a favorite takeaway, it looks like we've got Shining. Hey.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for the talk. It was very interesting.
Good.
This has kind of been on my mind for a while anyways in terms of a project that I'm brewing up. And so I wonder if maybe you can point me in the way of a resource.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ideas I'm having is to organize a class on the Oriental emergence or mégenance,
uh-huh.
and break down like six of the common entrance songs by
mm-hmm.
Macomb and rhythm and things
mm-hmm.
like this. Do you know if that's already done anywhere? Like, Is there a website, or has somebody already like posted or listed out like the sort of breakdown of the songs?
I have not seen anything so specific down to the Macamats. I've seen a few where, you know, they talk about the different rhythms and sort of emotional feeling that is personal, you know, listening to, but I have not seen it as far as Macamat go. I think that would be an excellent idea for you to do and post it so that, you know, other people can appreciate it. That would be a challenge because, you know, oftentimes we're going by, you know, what the composers have, the information that they've given us. Like I said, trying to listen to something and determine what maqam it's in is incredibly difficult. But, you know, if you're up to the challenge, I say go for it.
Yeah, I figured I would probably, like, if I couldn't find a resource that was already available, I'd ask one of the, like, local musicians who
yes,
will have that a would better be, ear for that than I will.
That would be spectacular, yeah. If you could bend the ear of a musician and at least get, you know, some of it, that in itself would be very, very helpful. I am curious... because Mergensies are so, I call them the ADD of belly dancing because they just, you know, jump around so much. I do wonder if, you know, how that has been composed into them, if it was really a strong consideration. So I'd be curious to see what you learn. Keep me posted.
Yeah, it seems like we had a... I don't know if you know Henna and David Reese, but they're here in the Portland, mm-hmm. Oregon area, and they did a mm-hmm. workshop on Anafi and Tazarik mm-hmm. last year and did that where they broke down the whole song kind of minute by minute about with the yeah. maqam and all of that, which is kind of where this idea is stemming from.
Fantastic.
It was really interesting to see, like, I don't know, just to be able to analyze it that way and
mm-hmm.
See where those like dramatic changes are coming from. Because I think
yes.
in that song there was multiple change of maqam, but I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and look at it.
Yeah, let's see do I have Anafi and Tazarik. It is.
Do you have that one listed in Hijaz?
Yeah, it starts with Hijaz, and then can go into so. To get a little bit further into it, you can have multiple maqamats in it. So like there's Hijaz Rast and Hijaz Sika. And so, yeah, so Anafi and Tazarik would be one of those that has multiples within the song itself. Yeah.
So if I can hijack your question for a second, so how often is it, or how common is it for a song to change maqams in the middle? Is it one of those things, you know, it's like some songs you keep one rhythm throughout, but
yes.
a lot of songs change
yes.
frequently. Is that like just a different structure
yes.
of song the way it is that, and they're both pretty common, or is it less common to have one?
Exactly. Yes to all of that. The songs that are going to be more of your sort of standard verse chorus type thing are mostly going to be in one maqam, whereas the more complicated songs, the Mergensies and things like that, they're going to have multiple. And oftentimes, like I was saying, it's the taqseems that will link them. So in a multi-format, multi-part song kind of series, it's that taqseem that's going to switch it into the next maqam.
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd already talked about that, because one of the things David had mentioned in their workshop was when it was switching from one maqam to another, or using a taqseem as an interlude, there was,
yes.
I don't know the right word for it, maybe it has to do with the jinn, but there's something about they can slide between maqam because there's like a common note like in
yes.
one maqam, and then they can start another one from that same note. Could you
yes.
maybe explain
yes.
that a little more?
Yeah, because the makam are not dependent on a starting note like A or B or C. They're dependent on the interval between the notes. So you can have makam rast and makam bayati start on A. Does that make sense? So you can have A, the key of, or the, the note A as your starting point, and rast is going to start with find it here. A whole note step up from A, so it'd be A to B. But then if you were doing Hijaz on A, it would be a half note up, so it would be A to A sharp. Does that make sense? So you can use the same note A to link the two maqam. I literally need a flip chart to be
This would be
able to
really
show this.
cool to do with like having a musician on the call too to sort of illustrate that for us.
Yes, that would be
Maybe
awesome.
don't know don't
Yeah, that
know.
would be for next
I looked
time.
into seeing if I could gather some music clips, but I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find enough of a
Yeah.
selection that didn't have copyright issues.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of the problem. So I would say yes, go take advantage of what musician friends that you have and explore this with them because I mean, as we know, dancers and musicians tend to like to talk about their art. And so, I would hope that they would be more than willing to talk with you about it.
Cool. Thank you.
Good luck. This sounds like a great project. I seriously, please email me. Or join our Roxology page and post your findings there.
Definitely. I really like the sound of your program, and I'm trying to figure out, how to get more involved in this sort of geeky realm, things like this, since I'm a critical overthinker and just haven't quite figured
Woohoo.
out the what I have to offer just as yet.
Well, this is a movement that is taking off. I was so excited to when I met Nadira Jamal and seeing what she's doing and in keeping with, what I'm interested in and what I'm seeing more and more people looking into these the what did you call it? The hows and not the hows but the whys and the wherefores.
So it's the not the what, but the why and the how.
That's it, yes. So I see that as a movement really across the board. And so the more people who are looking into that and bringing it forward, just the better dancers we're all going to be, for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Shining, and good luck with your project.
Thank you.
All right. If anybody else would like to jump in with a question or share your favorite takeaway or a story, we would love to hear from you. All right. Well, I think we will call it a night then. Thank you so
Excellent.
much, Jamie Lynn.
This has been wonderful fun. I know this is a convoluted topic, so I hope that you found something that you can sink your teeth into and go explore a little further.
All right. And in terms of what else is going on in the belly dance geek world, don't forget, folks, we've got another podcast. It's called More Than Steps. And these are much shorter podcasts that are released once a week. So if you'd like some much smaller bites from me, you can find those at bellydancegeek.com/steps. And thank you, everybody, for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We've got a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members. I'll send out an email shortly with a link with an invitation. If you're not already in there, just be aware that there is an approval delay. You do have to be approved to join the group just to make sure that we're all dancers and not people who like to creepily hang around dancers. So sometimes it can take us a couple of days to approve you. That email will also include a link to the call recording if you want to listen to this again, a link to Jamie Lynn's website and the resources that she's mentioned, and also a link to our feedback survey. So if you have any topics, speakers, or improvements that you would like to suggest, we would love to hear from you. We actually have almost a year's worth of guests booked out ahead of time, so we're not adding anybody immediately, but I'd still love to hear your suggestions, and we'll keep them in mind for the future. Our next call is going to come up in February, but the date and time are still TBD, so keep an eye on your inbox for those details. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know anybody who would like to join us, you can do that at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Nadira.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.